Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, talking to you from an absolutely stunning Vancouver day as we've finally settled into summer, and talking across the Atlantic with someone who has gone well above and beyond by making herself available at 10 p.m. after, you know, getting everybody else in her family to bed, I understand. Her name is Anne Gaunt. Anne, thanks for making the time at this exceptional hour.
No, that's cool. It's dark here, but we did have a sunny day in England too, which makes a nice change.
Absolutely, and sometimes it's just easier to do these things after dark when you're not distracted by wanting to be outside.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, but our listeners won't, that we are going to talk about a paper called Playing the Game, How Do Surgical Trainees Seek Feedback Using Workplace-Based Assessments? The paper's coming out in the September 2017 issue of Medical Education, and I should let people know that you're a surgeon working in Northwest England, and this is part of the work that has been conducted for a PhD that's nearing completion, as I understand it, through the Warwick Medical School.
Yeah, that's cool, yeah. Hopefully not too much further to go now. Nice to see it done.
Yeah,
hopefully this year.
Always nice to see the end in sight. The paper's interesting for a number of reasons, and I wanted to have the chance to talk with you about it in part because there's been so much emphasis put on giving good feedback, making sure students, trainees get enough feedback over the course of many decades in medical education and literally a century in the broader research sphere. But there's been very little talk about what the trainees' role is in getting that feedback and whether or not they're able to seek out the feedback that they might benefit from. Can I ask to start why that was a priority area for you in particular? And secondly, can you tell us a little bit about the context in which this looked like it would be an interesting issue?
Yeah, I guess partly based around my own experiences, if you like, as the equivalent of a middle to more senior resident through the North American system, then have been involved for quite a long time in, you know, looking after more junior trainees, and as workplace type assessment systems and stuff have developed, then tried to take on a bit of a proactive role with junior trainees in undertaking these clinical based assessments and things and providing feedback to trainees at the same time. And I just remember one particular instance, if you like, where I'd taken a junior trainee through a fairly simple case, and we were having a cup of tea, it's English, at the end of the case, just chatting about, you know, how the case had gone, and really striking me that the person who I was interacting with and trying to give them not confrontational but quite, you know, specific feedback about things maybe they might think about changing, and to be faced with somebody who was very kind of not wanting to be part of that dialogue, who was quite kind of like, well, I know what went wrong and I know what I need to do and I don't need you to tell me, you know, what I need to change. And I was quite struck by the fact that although as trainers and medical educators, we can be quite clear in our own minds about what kind of feedback we might like to impart on people. It isn't a monologue in one direction, you know. Trainees have to be willing to seek that out, and that sometimes people aren't willing to take the feedback that maybe is thrust upon them, and just that whole kind of dynamic of how it's not a one-sided. Trainees play an important role in the whole feedback thing, and maybe that's something that's been less explored in the medical education literature.
Yeah, well, and it's a bit ironic that it's been underexplored given how much emphasis the medical profession has put on people being self-directed and self-motivated and self-regulating and everything else. And that story that you just provided really spoke to people being in some situations less receptive to feedback that's being offered to them. Was the focus of this study on all forms of students reacting in better or worse ways to feedback, or was it more deliberately meant to be about when they proactively sought feedback?
Yeah, and a bit about trying to separate distinct parts of the whole thing doesn't always work out. But from that then, in what circumstances are people motivated to go out and actively seek feedback? What gets people into that place where they're prepared to engage in those dialogues with trainers and other people about going about seeking feedback? So so that's part of And I think certainly in the UK, with the Big Muta competency-based model of training and assessment systems put in the workplace, you know, it provides people with a framework or some kind of scaffolding, if you like. So if they want to go out and seek feedback, then they have a forum if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, and speaking of using a framework, you had some prior anticipation about some of the themes or issues that might be relevant from some previous quantitative work that had been done. Can you tell us a little bit about what you went in anticipating and what you were trying to explore a bit more deeply with the focus groups that you ran for this study?
Well, there's not so much in the education literature. There's been probably since the mid-80s quite a bit of literature from organisational psychology and people in business and further education, particularly in the States, looking at how people go about seeking feedback in the workplace. So there's some quantitative questionnaire driven kind of data, if you like, looking at the ways in which people will seek feedback and maybe what the drivers behind that in general, looking at how people go about seeking feedback by asking for feedback, or by essentially inferring feedback by looking to see what their supervisors or their trainers, how they interact with other people who work with them within the unit, the place in which they work. So there's quite a lot of work being done in psychology. And then a few papers in the field of medical education, some really interesting work by guys at Pim Tennyson, who looked at how people sought feedback in the context of night shift working trainees in the Netherlands, and talked about what drove people to seek feedback in that context. So that kind of gave some ideas about things that might be important. And also I did my own kind of quantitative part of my thesis, collected a quantitative questionnaire data from over 100-150 trainees throughout the UK, looking at what drivers they had for seeking feedback. So I had some kind of things that we thought could be important to people. So things about, you know, trainer relationships and people's ideas about the benefits to them of seeking feedback on what the personal costs might be. So we had some kind of hints along the way of things that could be important to people.
Yeah, and so I assume the reason for moving to a focus group approach was to allow you to, you know, delve a little bit more deeply or richly into those issues. And to ask you to speak to those, I would like to take you right back to the title of your paper, Playing the Game, in quotes. What's the game that participants are playing when it comes to seeking feedback for work-based assessment, as far as you've been able to understand it from your participants?
I mean, the people spoke about lots of things, really, but some of the issues that people spoke about within the confines of assessment systems. So knowing that although they were supposed to be completing workplace-based assessments to gain feedback so that they can improve their skills and their performance, I think lots of the trainees who spoke to me were really mindful of the fact that collectively, if you like, all these individual assessments were used summatively in their end of placement assessment. Although individually these things might not be looked at cumulatively, people expressed concerns that they were worried about having things kind of documented on their record that might not look good for them in an assessment situation. And so people talked about playing the game in terms of, you know, when they thought they'd done something well or things were okay, then that in those circumstances people waited and they then said, okay, well, you know, I'll ask you for feedback because I think I've done well in this. So in those circumstances people were prepared to ask for feedback through assessment systems, whereas perhaps they'd be a bit more reluctant to ask for feedback when things maybe haven't gone so well for them.
Right. And if we were to leave it entirely as suggesting that people were only playing a game, it might lead to one to a bit of a disheartened perception on what's actually happening in these settings. But there were some circumstances that seemed to position people where they felt like they could be a bit more open and a bit more seeking of feedback that might be more critical. Can you tell us a bit about what sort of factors seem to play a role there?
Partly, I think, just different people in a different time, in a different place, if you like. Partly individual factors about people whose own perceptions of the personal benefit and risk to them, if you like, where that sat. They felt like the benefit of, you know, asking when things had gone wrong outweighed the risk to them in terms of what may happen or may not happen with review to the assessment side of things. And I think people who felt that they had a good relationship with their trainer was important to them, and that they valued the information that they got back from that person, even though that might not necessarily be good for them in the future. They thought that the value of that information outweighed that risk, if you like. And so I think people often engaged in some kind of personal risk benefit thing. And I think some people spoke about things that they felt had gone quite badly wrong, but because they felt quite strongly that things hadn't gone right, then they felt responsible, I guess, in a way, to go about seeking information about how they could improve and change their practice. And those people had those kind of quite profound experiences that then meant that the benefits just to seeking feedback outweighed the kind of potential assessment problems that they may have in the future.
Right, and
it makes sense.
Yeah, well, it does make sense in that it, I think, really speaks to the complexity of this issue. There are a lot of factors at play, and a lot of probably quite implicit, at least in some circumstances, risk-benefit analyses that people are going through and trying to determine what they need and whether or not it's the right time to ask. Given that complexity and the idiosyncrasy that you described, do you have any general takeaways in terms of what educators might do to encourage and to support their trainees to be open to the feedback and to start taking control over the educational process in a way that might yield a more rapid rate of performance improvement?
I think from a trainer's or educator's perspective, I guess, often trainees talked about needing to feel that they had a relationship or an ongoing kind of rapport with the person that they worked with. And I know for lots of our very junior trainees, they see the same person very infrequently, you know, so having the opportunity to see, be involved with the same trainer and as an ongoing basis, I think helps trainees to have trust in that person and to trust that what they say is to respect them and to have trust in the responses and confidence they can give that bit of themselves that maybe hasn't gone so well to somebody and that that will be dealt with in a sympathetic but constructive way rather than when people meet each other very infrequently and yet trainees feel compelled to ask for feedback and trainers feel a responsibility to give feedback not really knowing where the person's come from and where that person's going. And so I think having time, if it's possible, to build those kind of ongoing relationships is important for people. And I think partly in a way people spoke about people have to accept that not everybody gets everything right the whole time and that we learn from the mistakes that we make, and that's an important part of being a clinician and all the rest of it. And so you learn from what doesn't go so well, but you partly learn from that by asking.
Right, and really reinforces the importance of everybody heeding those lessons and recognizing that just because one has been through all the competency hurdles doesn't mean that they themselves should be shut off to feedback, because it's not always going to go right as the clinician or the educator or the student all the time.
So I think in medicine we're very much driven sometimes by, you know, that you can't make mistakes and that, you know, it's not acceptable to talk about things that have gone wrong or things that don't go so well. But actually, when lots of trainees spoke, that's when they really learned to change their practice when things didn't go well, but that there's still that reticence amongst people to have open discussions about why things don't go well and practical suggestions for how you can improve things for next time. But I think setting the kind of environment where it's acceptable to have those discussions is one of the hardest things, I guess.
Yeah, and if we open up a conversation about culture, we're going to be here all night. But I'm glad you did, because I think it summarizes much of what I would take away from your paper as well. And so I'd say that more to say that it's probably the best point for us to tell our listeners that they should go read the paper if they want more of those details, because there's a lot of richness there. And I appreciate that you've tried to represent that complexity rather than making it sound like it's going to be a simple algorithm for everyone if they just do it the right way.
Yeah, I think if there was one right answer, maybe we'd have worked it out by then.
Yeah. Here's hoping.
Maybe not.
So thank you very much. I'll close by just reminding our listeners that I've been speaking with Anne Gaunt, whose paper called Playing the Game, How Do Surgical Trainees Seek Feedback Using Workplace-Based Assessment, is going to be released in the September 2017 issue of Medical Education, and you'll find it there. Thanks again, Anne, and congratulations on the imminent close of your PhD. I hope that your defense goes well.
Thank you. Thanks very much.